This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Steve, 3 points, clean sheet. All those are very important, but what do you take from tonight's game?
Well, I don't know what I'm doing, maybe.
You were a villain as a kid. I mean, is this special?
I was a straight and narrow as a kid.
Albert Adoma, three ball in, and it's headed home by Jack Grealish. The greatest moment of his life. Ball Aston Villa. He strikes at the heart of Birmingham.
Usually every time he finished a song, he'd get on a payphone wherever he was in the country and call me and wake me up. And so, like, he'd lay the phone down and start playing his guitar, you know? And that's how I heard this song the first time. I always thought this was a real pretty one. It's called My Old Man.
I used to have an alias I used to work under years ago called Buddhism, and literally I tried to put a remix out in Asia and I got a fucking backlash from hell. I was like, right, I can't do that then.
What did they say?
Did you say that's how disrespectful of you to try and make money off the name of religion? I was like, it's my family name.
Anyway, sorry, people, we're just waffling here. Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me to discuss
2018.
Yeah, some of the highlights of 2018 is Dan Rogers of thevillaunderground.com.
Hello.
And professional Buddhist Chris Budd.
Shalom.
Not very popular in Asia, though. Welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Welcome to 2019, everybody. It is.
Welcome.
I've got a good feeling about this year. 2018, not such a good feeling. 2019,
a bit 6 out of 10, I would say.
It was kind of the year that could have been but didn't.
Whacking teams left, right and centre under Smith before the defence realised who it actually was and started shipping goals. But
I mean, we had John Terry and then he left us and then we had the reconciliation. We separated for a bit and we're back together.
In between him trying to sell us like swimwear and...
Yeah.
What do you mean trying to? I've got the full range.
Good lad.
Trying to make out he had a perfect life on Instagram. We know it's covering over the cracks. Right, well...
Hashtag no filter.
A few weeks ago, I put out on the My Old Man Said Facebook page, I offered you up to give me your top 3 moments of the year. So we're going to just run through a few of them as the structure to the show. If you haven't listened to the show before, this isn't a typical My Old Man Said podcast. This is more one of our extra shows, which with 2019, we're going to do a normal show every week and we're going to try to throw in an extra show as well, which may be a Q&A, maybe some mumbo jumbo, who knows. But yeah, we have some leftover listener questions to go through as well. So let's start with 2018. Well, I'll just ask you, each of us, our defining moment, and let's say the worst thing that happened and your highlight. Dan Rogers, what was your highlight?
The highlight, I think the highlight was...
We didn't plan for this. I've just thrown it at him.
I think a singular highlight, I think it would be, I'm going to sit on the fence. The two goals in terms of, I thought McGinn's goal was a great goal. And I thought the Hutton goal with sheer volume in the Holt end was a great singular moment.
Faz inversão, inverteu errado. Pederson cortou. A bola sobrou para Hutton. Agradece ao Aston Villa. Hutton, bota velocidade, bota saúde, bota força. Vem trazendo o Pintão, golaço! Golaço de Hutton!
Worst moment, I think, was the realisation that Recon and Tony, Dr. Tony, that things were actually worse than we'd ever prophesied on this podcast or in the darkest corners of our minds. And those corners are dark. And I think that the prospect of Villa going out of business or whatever, you know, it for it to even have been on the table.
Yeah.
It was a real low.
So being on their knees in such a way financially...
It defies comprehension even looking back on it, but at the time it was terrifying.
So what's the defining moment of 2018?
For me, it was our abject failure in the playoff final. It was our biggest game in many years, and we didn't turn up, and we, you know, save for a couple of glimpses of from Grealish, you know, there were talking points in that game, but that was the defining moment for me, that there'd been all that build-up. We clawed our way into the playoffs. We'd done the hard work in the playoffs, and we were so limp, and all the stuff that came with it, that defined the whole season for me.
Yeah. Chris Budd. Let's say worst moment of 2018 as a Villa supporter.
Worst moment was probably the drive home from Wembley.
Oof.
Yeah,
that was just grim. You know, having come, my record at the new Wembley is appalling. I mean, I'm yet to see Villa win there, having missed the Liverpool game and gone to every other one. And
just a caveat, he's already mentioned this in the previous podcast, but he was at the San Siro watching the Milan derby when the Villa semi-final was on.
Yeah.
So we can let him off that one.
But as Dan said, I think, you know, we went away from the ground thinking, well, it was a huge opportunity missed, but little did we know the chaos that was about to ensue within a couple of days. That was definitely the lowest moment, I think.
Biggest moment, the positive moment?
I mean, Dan's already mentioned the goals. I would actually say that the first win over Blues, the February one, I think, because if I remember rightly, I think that was the seventh win on the bounce, wasn't it? That was a record win. It was obviously against the rivals.
It put us into second place.
Yeah,
the only time we've broken into the top two since we've been down in this
and that was the
league.
I think that was the... I remember we sat down after that game and said, this has to be the start of us really pulling away, and we just bottled it from that point.
Yeah.
So that would be
defining moment?
I would say the defining moment was the moment Glenn Whelan missed his penalty.
That's a good call.
Kind of summed up the city. It literally summed up the year. You know, some brilliant attacking play, some appalling defending. Ultimately, a big opportunity missed, and the tide turned, and Bruce was gone
via a cabbage as well.
Ah, yes, cabbage gate.
Yeah, I don't know. What's my biggest disappointment of this year? Well, I think it's obviously not getting promoted in the playoffs, but just that lack at halftime. Just being absolutely appalled by what had happened in front of your eyes, i.e. no effort, hardly a Villa player crossing the halfway line at times, and just seeing that you had a manager who was scared to actually try to win a game and was more concerned about not losing it. And Fulham, you know, they're not Barcelona. Come on. I mean, even though, you know, they were on hot form, it's not, we had the personnel to do it. We just didn't have a team because of the way the manager structured us. But yeah, that would be the disappointment, obviously.
And do you remember the real kick in the teeth after that game? I remember listening to Tom Bloody Kearney saying football was the winner today. You know, the team that turned up and played football won. And you thought, hate to say it, but he's right. But it's horrible to have that put down thrown at your team, isn't it? In such a big game. It's a horror. Yeah. It's one of the worst insults you could have in a playoff final.
We were the bad guys and we spoilt all the neutrals' enjoyment of that game.
Yeah.
Also, it's disappointing to actually have been in the playoff final. It sounds silly, but when you got a team like Cardiff getting automatic promotion,
it was a joke,
with a manager who got his job in the same week as Steve Bruce and had minuscule resources compared to Steve Bruce, and we're not even talking about net transfer fees, or he literally had nothing. He was, you know, beg, stealing and borrowing little loans here and there, no names, and just he got that team fired up, playing beyond their, you know, capabilities. It made very little go a long way. I mean, you know, for God's sake, Joe Bennett's playing left back for them, and most Villa fans just ridiculed him when he was at the club, but he was good enough to get them promoted. And that was that probably hurt more than even the playoff loss, because the playoff final, you know, it's a lottery and we're against a team who could actually play football. And the fact that in the cold light of day, we couldn't even pit Cardiff in that season just made me just think, well, all these arseholes in the press that have been blowing smoke up Bruce's arse all the time and saying what a promotion expert he is. I mean, I'm sorry, but you've just got outdone by Neil Warnock and a very, very average Cardiff team. Pluses, was there any? I think the biggest plus is, considering the shit that we were in by our Chinese friends and the mystical recon group, the fact that we got owners that we did that came out of nowhere in Suarez and Wes Edens. I mean, obviously, the proof's in the pudding, but that was almost like a get-out-of-jail card, because we could have been in real shit, because Dr. Tony was scrambling around. He didn't know what the hell was going on. I mean, some of the people he was engaging with are ridiculous in terms of selling the club, saving the club and raising money. So to get two bona fide people like them connected with Villa offers actual hope, because we are in a serious position here. And I think, as I said on the previous podcast, we may not get out of this division anytime soon. So at least you have people who give you a fighting chance, shall we say. So that's probably in terms of the long term, just having those two owners in with a bit of wealth, because in this stupid modern game now, you obviously need a few pennies in the bank to compete. Defining moment. That must be the Villa Underground Christmas jumper.
Massive. Absolutely huge.
They said it couldn't be done.
They said it couldn't be done.
I tell you, if it was one thing that our Chinese owners did come through on, it was Christmas jumpers. 9% spandex still available from the VillaUnderground.com store. Sizes limited.
Yeah, for next Christmas. But no, seriously speaking... probably Alan Hutton's goal, because I was standing on this fire escape stroke balcony where the police do their briefings above the control centre, overlooking the side of the right-hand side of the hole, and just seeing, it was almost like you see him on the horizon getting the ball, and then he obviously skis all the way through the Blues defence and midfield, puts it away, and you just think, this is kind of Villa, something beautiful can come from something so ridiculous. If there's any one player that's been with us since we've been shit, it's Alan Hutton.
So he constant.
Constant embodiment of this turgid period from McLeish onwards, who obviously signed him. It's been Hutton, but it's kind of an oxymoron, because he's the only one who's like a cockroach has refused to die. we tried to loan him out everywhere, and then we couldn't get rid of him because his contract was too good. But, and you know, wrote him off so many times. We put him in the bomb squad, but that failed to detonate him. And he's come back. He still can't mark to save his life. But, you know, name me how many players get to score a goal like that. And that was, you know, come on, it's better than Maradona's goal. We've already proven that in the head-to-head analysis. There are, you know, there's still wonder to be had from supporting this team. But it drives you crazy because some of the things that have happened, since My Old Man Said and Villa Underground have been running, shouldn't have happened. I mean, they just defy common sense, whether it's people that have worked at the club, whether it's players that have been signed for the club or managers even.
It defies rational explanation, especially when you stack what's happened against the piles of money.
Yeah.
Unbelievable money that have been expended. I mean...
So in a nutshell, Alan Hutton's goal pretty much is a metaphor for what's been going on at Villa. Right. I'm just going to read out three of these points. So let's start with... Right. So these are the top three moments. This is Andrew Weisslaw. Apologies if I pronounce your name wrong. Number one, Whelan's penalty. Number two,
solid choice.
Whelan's goal at Borough, worthy of a Pushka. Number three, top moments of 2018, Whelan's pace.
Now that does prompt me for my anecdote from the Hawthorns, where an Albion fan behind me remarked as Whelan was coming onto the pitch as a sub that the only thing with less pace than Whelan himself was his receding hairline.
But he's too old now. I mean, him, Jedinak, even McCormack were basically signed to get us up in that first season, and then they would have got, you know, tried to loan him out or something. Anyway, right, moving on, Mark Barron, he says top highlights 2018, Wolves 4-1.
Yeah, good check.
Blues 4-2, Bristol 5-0.
Oh, fireworks, Bristol.
Right, shout, boom.
That's a good point. The Wolves one was something that was actually...
That was the best performance, wasn't it, last season?
It was an either-or game after, like, I don't know, it's 25 minutes, first half hour. Yeah. And then we just exploded. But that was like giving the upstarts a slap because obviously they were running away with the league. Mm. And when that game happened, you actually thought, hang on a minute, they've got some tricky fixtures coming up. That's kind of knocked them a bit. We might still be challenging for automatic there. And obviously we fucked it up after that.
It just makes me think of the two games after where we obviously went and lost both of them. But it was...
It makes me think of that annoying piece on the website that said, we've got our Villa back.
Yeah.
Bollocks.
And this is how reactionary social media is now. If you win something, it's like everything's great. Everything's, you know... You're back. It's all good. If you lose, it's like the end of the world. There's not many rational heads about. Sorry, Mark goes on to say, gold-wise, it was McGinn against Sheffield Wednesday, standard. Yep. Hutton against the Scum, standard. Grealish against Cardiff. Actually, that was a good goal.
Yeah, that was a great goal.
Jonathan Nettleton says, top moments of 2018. Number one, Bruce getting sacked. Number two, the sacking of Steve Bruce. Number nice three, Bruce leaving. I see what he's done there.
He's on, Bruce he's fan
on,
then, yeah?
Yeah, he's on theme, isn't he?
Yeah, he's on theme. All three very valid highlights of the year. Dave Rogers says, number one, getting to the playoff final, as we've discussed. Number two, but I don't know, is that a highlight if you don't win it? I don't know.
Those two playoff games, to be fair, if you count those as the getting there, we made a... Bloody hard work of the second leg. It was a horrible watch.
Both legs were behind
the sofa.
God, it was awful.
So, yeah, three of those games, in terms of the playoff games, two of them were a nightmare to watch. One of them, you know, okay, because we scored quite early, didn't we, in that game?
Yeah, away from home, yeah.
Yeah, didn't we?
Played really well.
Number two, top point, keeping Grealish. That sometimes I thought I was the only one shouting out to keep him as everybody else was trying to drive him off to White Hart Lane.
Listen, we needed that £2 million.
Number three, Smith coming in. Well, the jury's still out on that one. Let's be rational here. But he has been a breath of fresh air in terms of his approach. And as we discussed in the previous show, but is it reckless? We will find out once the personnel are in place. Hopefully at the end of this transfer window. Adam Keeble, former writer for My Old Man Said. Highlights, Grealish versus the Blues. Yep. McGinn's wonder goal. Number three is probably my favourite way of putting it. Bruce getting cabbaged. Bruce getting cabbaged.
Superb.
And leaving.
Superb.
In terms of losing a manager, I think Villa do it in style. And I thought the way we got rid of Bruce, we wanted him out just because we knew this was never going to go anywhere, despite what the Birmingham Mail said, guaranteeing that he would get us promoted. But
if it's not bed sheets, it's cabbages.
Whelan missing a penalty in injury time after... Oh. After somebody had rolled a cabbage at Bruce, it's just poetic Villa for the annals. He has a fourth point. This is getting a bit greedy. He actually lives in America. So he says, seeing Villa live for the first time in 2 years versus Stoke in the bastard cold and rain.
Welcome home.
Welcome home, yes. Shame you didn't stay on a bit longer, so you could have gone to the FA Cup game against Swansea and frozen your bollocks off. Dan Short says, Sheffield United away. Bristol City home.
Presumably that was the 4-1 away defeat he's on about, because that, I mean, that was a highlight.
Yeah.
Why? The Al-Ghazi consolation was a moment in time.
All four corners of the ground singing for Steve Bruce's head as well, I seem to recall.
Do you think that was the Sheffield United moment?
Oh. Don't think so.
Maybe. Maybe it was the Snodgrass winner in the last
minute. The last minute limbs. That was a good moment.
Oh, but that Snodgrass pass against Burton.
pass pawn.
Yeah, why isn't that in any of these top threes, that Snodgrass pass against Burton?
So good you can't find it anywhere online.
Number three, Borough away playoffs. Mm. Although Borough away in the league was a much better trip. Yeah. Anyway, Matt Parker, number one, driving to the hotel after not drinking at my wife's mate's wedding and frantically searching through the radio stations to find out that we'd just gone 4-1 up against Wolves. Number two, singing at Wembley, inside and outside the ground. Well, that's what kind of makes the day, but...
Football at Wembley, the modern Wembley, with Villa, to be fair.
Especially when Chris Budd is in the terraces.
Yeah. It was a great day until the game kicked off. I'd had a brilliant day up to that point. Hot and sunny. It was cracking really day. It got fucking really ruined by them.
Those bastards turned up.
They always ruin my days out.
It's the thing, when you lose a game, it almost resets and deletes all the good fun you had on the day.
It does at Wembley.
Yeah. It's that, like you say, it's either that long train or long drive home.
Yeah, or you have to stand outside and wait for the train. And then you get home and think, fucking hell, I spent like £200-300 on that day out for nothing.
Bag of shit tea.
I could have gone on holiday, but no.
Yeah, Dan, that is the point.
Receding hairline.
As the Leeds fan was saying on the train to me, it's like £200 every trip, away trip, following Leeds. And you just think, yeah, you can go on a holiday for that, pretty much. If you club together with your mates. Number three, perfect view of Hourihan's goal against Smallheath from the upper hole. There's been certain goals, and we're talking this Hourihan goal, McGinn's goal, Hutton's goal, sometimes you're in the right place of the ground at the right time to have the perfect view of the goal, which it's one of the problems. Right. You have that moment and you see it, and then you'll watch the replay and that will kind of cover over your actual instinctive first memory of that goal where you did actually have in the ground the perfect view.
I mean, Glenn Whelan's penalty would be another one, I suppose.
Exactly. You had a pretty good view of that. Down.
I think I was somewhere under the Aston Expressway at that point. I'd walked out. So. All I had was some bloke walking down the road going, we've got a penalty. Oh, fucking hell, Whelan's taking it. He's going to miss. 30 seconds later, he's only gone and missed it.
No, who would have possibly thought?
Was you still in the ground, Dan? That's your domain, isn't it?
I periscoped it, yeah. I don't know why. Because much to the amusement of every other football fan in the world. I like to think that it did its bit in making up the Villa board's mind. I don't know.
Excellent. John Jones, number one moment of 2018. A Villa fan passing on his deceased father's season ticket to a veteran commander, OAP. I know I was that soldier.
Nice story.
And a nice touch as well.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? Win, lose, or draw. Bit of community.
Number two, Bruce getting sacked. Yeah. Well, obviously that season ticket would have come in nicely if he was at that Preston game to see the shenanigans that we've just been talking about. And point number three, the Cafu goal against Smallheath. It's funny how you just know a player's so wrong for your team, but when he does something like that, what can you say? What can you do?
I think every club has a player like that in the history, don't they?
Yeah.
Where you think they'd never get in any
goal.
Other team, would they?
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine if Grealish should have scored that goal, though? Bloody hell.
Mm. Yeah, Mika Richards. Have I said it before in a previous podcast that his career is actually over, but it just hasn't come out yet properly? Anybody would know that, really. Jason Turner. Let's just do one more of these. Jason Turner, highlight of 2018, the pre-match buzz at Wembley, which was actually pretty good.
I enjoyed that day.
I didn't have the great. I think I got there kind of late-ish, and kind of when I went to the Green Man, it was like kind of dying down there.
Well, the Green Man got shut at about 8:30 in the morning. It was so rammed.
Yeah, so I just went when it was half empty, just before the kickoff, and so I didn't have the greatest pre-match. I was hoping the game would take over. Alas, not. But number two is Derby away, where we really started to believe we could do something again.
Past tense.
That's a good...
Yeah,
past tense.
It's already in the past tense with Smith.
It's probably the last time we kept a clean sheet, wasn't it, as well?
But it was one of those games. You do get games that you go, oh, hang on a minute. And I always remember one was Graham Taylor when we beat Everton 6-2, where you thought, and that's when we came second in the league to Liverpool, 1990. When you think, hang on, we're going to do something. Another one, Ron Atkinson away at Manchester United at Old Trafford, where it was 1-1 at Old Trafford. We went 1-0 up that rocket from Staunton, and it was back to the wall. But
that lovely left foot.
Way we defended in Bosnick, and they were attacking wave after wave. And it was literally like eight players all lined up in a line, just coming at us every time. But because we almost won that game and held them off, you just thought, yeah, we're in this title race. And fast forward 100 years, and when we beat Derby 3-0, you thought, actually, because we were expecting to get probably hammered by Derby. I mean, that was a potential outcome. You wouldn't have been surprised.
How things have changed.
But the way we took them apart, and that could have been 5 or 6, 7 even, and you thought, hang on a minute, Smith's doing something here.
He's cracked it.
You know, we just mentioned about things are either fantastic. He's cracked it. Things are either fantastic or, you know, it's doom and gloom. But people are saying, Smith, he'll get it right. I can guarantee you that. And, it's going to take a couple of transfer windows, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, hang on a minute. What I was watching against Derby was pretty much there. And then against Middlesbrough as well. And you think, well, he just needs to sort that defence out so we can have a bit of consistency and don't give away cheap goals, drop cheap points, and we can get in the playoffs this season, and get over the line. If we get in the playoffs, I fancy us. Because the only team I don't fancy us against is probably Leeds, and they'll probably be up automatic anyway. Yeah, I think that Derby game does resonate more so than we probably thought about at the time. Because it shows you the potential of what we can be this season already. Number three is the Wolves at home game, which, again, probably we thought the same thing about that game, where we thought, shit, we can still get automatic, and then we all fucked it up straight. We fucked it up straight away after. And as he says, particularly Burka's goal. And that was, for me, that was probably the funniest goal of 2018. Because that was a goal out of pure anger and and hatred to Steve Bruce for leaving him out in the lurch for so long when he deserved to play games. And he'd practically, played back-to-back decent games where he'd been man of the match, and Bruce would still drop him and put Whelan in or Jedinak.
Jedinak.
I mean, the good news is this season he's desperate to prove that he needs to be dropped.
Yeah, I mean, the roles roles have reversed a little bit this season.
But I remember the Wolves one, because after that, everybody else was celebrating in front of the Holt End, and he'd already fucked off down the tunnel. He didn't want anything to do with it.
When he scored it, the way you celebrated, he just kind of stood there on his end. He was like, went to the Holt End, fuck you, and went to the Trinity, and fuck you. He went to the Witten, and fuck
you. He's renowned for being grumpy, isn't he?
He looked like a miserable sod.
That was literally a player picking the ball up and going, fuck this, I'm not passing, and then just going for it, I'm out of here. And that was, rare to see. That was just a purely selfish goal on spite of being dropped, and to his due unjustly many, many times. Mm. Anyway, that's enough of the moments of the year. We're just going to blaze through. I asked for listener questions. These are ones still relevant, and obviously they're always big burning issues.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Who's Ada Dumbleton?
From Harry Potter.
These are Instagram name handles, so they're going to be silly. So Addle Dumbleton from Harry Potter. After all the new owners, Smith hype has settled down. What happens if we don't get promoted? Chris Budd, what happens, Chris?
We panic. No. I think there'll be... Smith will have an idea. You know, I think personnel-wise, it'll be a very different-looking team, but you'd still be sort of confident that he'll have an idea what he wants to do. And you'd still like to think with the resources that the two guys who've come in who own it now, he'll still have a budget to spend. Financial fair play is going to begin to pinch, you'd imagine.
Yeah, I think if they get over the hurdle of financial fair play this coming few months, if they can get over it now, then I think that is the major hurdle, shall we say.
Because, I mean, the reality is that if we didn't go up, Grealish would go, but the money we'd get for him would probably keep us solvent for a while anyway.
Yeah, I think that's basically the financial fair play backup plan if we don't get promoted is basically Grealish.
So be it.
Dan... Do you think it's going to... Do you think a lot of fans have resigned themselves to just, you know, sit around the championship for, you know, however long? Or because there doesn't seem to be a burning focus to get promoted.
I think some fans are actually quite enjoying the championship. I don't think there's any danger in me saying that, that there's not a huge appetite for amongst... I don't want to put percentages on it, but I think there's an amount of fans who don't miss being the whipping boys of the Premier League or... finishing between 8th and, I don't know, 18th. I don't think there's any huge miss there for some people.
But is the league, the Premier League, not a different beast now? Because I see there's almost like three leagues within that league now. There's the top five.
I agree. No, I agree. And I think it's where we sit within that, isn't it? What our aspiration would be if we did get up.
Yeah, then there's like a, let's say it's a mini league of four or five middling teams. And I think Wolves have just got into that. And then the rest of it is pretty much on par to the top of the championship, I think. So if we got our act together, we wouldn't be the whipping boys. You could hope to get a mid-table finish with, you know, just getting a decent team up there.
Oh, yeah. I think the other problem that the Premier League has, and this is where, personally, I'd like to be promoted. I think that just because, I don't know, maybe I have romantic ideas that we could actually rebuild ourselves into some sort of respectable, reputable club again. I don't know.
You want to watch your Europa League football again, don't you?
I don't want to watch Europa League football again, I must admit, but, you know, I think that this... Do you know what? It links to my point, really, that the Premier League needs to address the fact that there are a lot of pretty unsexy fixtures in there. Yeah. I'm not too excited about Villa playing Cardiff in the Premier League. I'm not excited about Villa playing Huddersfield in the Premier League. You know, insert probably six or seven other teams for me, I have to admit.
Yeah.
And that's the issue that, you know, you get up there and you get into the Europa League. Nobody wants to be in the Europa League. No fan does, no player does, no coach does. So, and that, you know, just going back to the question quickly is around this, you know, if when the hype settles down with Smith and what happens if we don't get promoted, this is probably the shrewd bit about the Smith appointment that, you know, if it comes off well, he gets us promoted and he's the exciting up-and-coming English coach with Villa. If we stay down with him, well, he's got a good pedigree for sort of surviving and doing well on a limited budget, developing players, and it sets us up for... potentially the reality of having to live within our means.
Getting cosy and being a championship team for the next decade.
Hooray!
Anyway, next question from Stephen. How do you pronounce that? Delput? Deliput?
Stephen Dalipt? Or Stephen Daly, possibly with PT on the end.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? Stephen. Welcome, Stephen.
Would you like to see Villa in a documentary like the new Sunderland one? Oh, what a horror show that would be.
Well, we're a bit past the sweet spot now, aren't we? It would have been interesting in the last few years. Mm. Fucking hell, if that had started from when we were going down to now, it would have been chaos.
No, Zogbia, Lescott, Richards, McCormack's.
You could have started that documentary just about the day that, like, McLeish arrived. That'd have been a nice starting point.
Well, the myomensaid.com is literally a documentary on that period.
So you can go through the back catalogue.
Yeah, I think it's time for the book.
I mean, the Sunderland one's been well done, apparently. The Man City one's quite good.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Manchester City one is it's like the Hollywood ending. Obviously, they're winning. Mm. The Sunderland one's, I haven't seen it yet. I will have a look at it.
It's kind of the opposite.
It's the opposite, and that instantly makes it more interesting. Is, you know, when a club erodes away,
yeah, just implodes in a comical fashion. But
and there is, it's symbiotic with what's happened to Villa, so it will be an interesting watch for sure. Because, you know, Sunderland, not quite the size of Villa, but big club, because they, you know, they get more at their games.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the time with Villa, to be brutally honest, I don't want to know what's going on behind the scenes. I dread to think half the time.
Well, why do you always ask me?
because sometimes I don't have a choice.
What's happening behind the scenes?
I think it would have been interesting to have a film crew following Dr. Tony around for six or nine months.
Yeah, that would have been fantastic, actually.
He'd have been chasing for the SD cards, wouldn't he, Carl? yeah, about that documentary.
Yeah, no, that's that
recon office that doesn't exist in Shanghai.
Because when you're doing a documentary, I mean, you can do the same old shit. And, you know, Netflix has pretty much got a template on how to do a documentary now. Doesn't matter what it's about. It has a very similar kind of production values. And, you know, it's pretty good. The standard's good. But I think you need something different if you were to do one on Villa now. And I think what you just suggested would be great. From the fly on the wall, Dr. Tony would be a great, great watch, I think.
I'd like to just have a Dr. Tony documentary now. I want to see what he's doing, where he is.
Yeah. I'd quite like reality TV, to be honest, a bit like Big Brother.
Yeah, get him on. Get him on the Jungle show as well.
And the Keith Wyness Diaries.
Keith Wyness Diaries. There's a podcast.
Yeah.
Right, Kazim 18 says, expectations for 2019.
Promotion done.
We have to aim for promotion, don't we? I think that
have to be promotion. However we do it, doesn't matter. Just we have to go
I up. Would be seriously pissed off if we didn't make the playoffs this season.
Yeah, I would consider that a big underachievement.
You just look at the teams around us and you think, Jesus Christ, you've only got to get your act together for probably 10 games.
Exactly. And you can say all you want about, yeah, but look at what happened to us in the summer and our financial problems and blah, blah, blah. This already happened. And since then, we've beaten Derby 3-0. We've beaten Middlesbrough 3-0. We went on a nice little run. Should have beaten the Baggies, should have beaten Leeds. So we can compete. We have a squad. People conveniently forget that when, you know, they just want to justify their own, you know, their opinion to make an excuse for Villa being subpar. But we're good enough to get in the playoffs. That's the bottom line. I mean, you know, we should obviously be getting automatic. I would have liked to have seen Villa during their time in the Championship just to stride through the Championship and you thinking that's a team that's going to do some damage already in the Premier League.
It would have been nice to see Villa as a front runner, just to see how we actually react to being, you know, the first or second with a gap and going, right, are we going to, you know, because I actually, as much as I dislike Bruce, I actually think if we'd have ever got a 4, 5, 6 point gap on third place, I think Bruce would have known there how to grind it out and get us over the line.
Yeah, well, you can go and support Sheffield Wednesday and find out if they can do it.
No, I think I'll pass, thanks, Dave, to be brutally honest.
Right.
Watching Barry Bannon playing in goal.
J7 says, talk about how shite Birmingham City are.
Where's all the money gone?
They still managed to go above us, and their form's been better than Villa's while Dean Smith's been in charge. So,
and as per usual, we beat the Blues and then we implode. Yeah. So I can't be arsed to laugh at the Blues, to be honest.
No. And they've got a shout for playoffs as well, by the way. So watch out. When I'm at these police, if I go to these police meetings, these independent advisory group things, I always like to throw in, have you prepared for the Villa Blues playoff final at Wembley yet?
God, can
there's
you
no
imagine?
Plans in place.
Or a two-legged playoff.
Exactly.
Can
I mean,
imagine? Oh,
choose your
word.
Poison. Which one do
the
you
train
want?
Train journey down will be nice.
Exactly. Choose you.
That'd be fun, wouldn't
if
it?
If you were the, like, you're the head of the police, West Midlands Police, and I'm giving you a choice. I am the football god, and I give you a choice. You can have Villa Blues Wembley final, or you have to take Villa Blues two legs, playoff semis, which one do you go for?
God. I think it'd be the first behind closed doors.
Yeah.
Wembley final.
It will be the first game to ever have a metal wall down Wembley Way.
Like, yeah.
The whole of Wembley Way.
They'll have to draft in look, the people from the River Plate.
It will literally look like it will look like the West Bank.
I think you go. I mean, if I had to choose, I mean, I would go for the Wembley one just for the fun and games involved.
Oh, shits and games.
But also, from a West Midlands point of view, your main responsibility is obviously getting them out of Birmingham, and then doesn't it pass over?
Pass him off to the Cockneys.
Passes over to the
there
army.
There you go.
Then,
see you later.
Yeah, the army,
the SAS, and the SWAT team come in.
But no, that's something that people haven't.
Oh, they'll play it abroad. That'd be good. We discussed this before, didn't yeah. we? We could play it in Argentina.
Boca Juniors' stadium.
But I looked at the league table this time last year. Derby, I think, were in automatic spot. They dropped off. There was.
Sorry, I'm just in the next question. It's hilarious.
There was. Well, that's gonna take at least half an hour to discuss. Sorry, going back to it. Derby were in second place. They dropped out of the playoffs altogether. They scrambled in at the end. But they
lost to Fulham, didn't they?
They dropped out of the automatics. Bristol City would started off really well. They faded out. I think Sheffield United. So, you know, how the playoffs look now and even automatic is not designated. I would half expect West Brom to muscle in on the automatics above Norwich at the moment.
Over the season,
you think they might run them down.
Yeah, that's how I'm seeing it planning out. But in terms of the Blues, they've got a legitimate chance of playoffs.
But they stand to get hit with I think they've got a decent coach, but they're going to get hit with, I think, the most points deduction that could be levied at them. And you'd have to, I mean, look, they need £40 million in year just to, so there's going to be real pinch points there. And I think that could just see them peter out, I think, over the next few weeks and months.
But what happens if they make it? They finish sixth, Villa finish seventh, and then they drop the points reduction on them, and we have to swap places.
That'll go down well.
Exactly.
That'd be wonderful, wouldn't it?
It would be funny, but
you'd never hear the end of that. Oh, you only got in the playoffs.
Would you prefer that?
It'd be a shit way to.
Would you prefer that just for the laughs, the LOLs, or would you prefer Villa beating Blues at Wembley playoff final?
I'll beat them at Wembley.
I'm not sure I could take the stress.
It would be a stressful
I'm just going
day.
On previous
and
form
I think
at Wembley.
The win at Wembley would have to go one or two ways.
Could you imagine losing at Wembley to them?
Oh,
well,
just
I remember like when Liverpool and Manchester United were lined up to potentially appear in the Champions League final. This is going back around 8 years ago or so. And I think one of them lost their particular semi-final. And I remember my Liverpool friend dreading that eventuality, but you know, I think as a neutral English fan, I'd be, you know, and two teams that historically don't like each other, Champions League finals, as good as it gets as a face-off. And he was saying, just the joy of winning is almost offset by the risk of getting beaten by those bastards.
I
never enjoy Derby Day.
I don't enjoy Derby Day.
Because we can only ever lose. If we beat them, that you get you've got a team worth X amount of money, blah, 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 an expectation. All Villa can do on Derby Day is lose. Yeah. It'd be the same in a playoff final.
But just from a policing point of view, it'd be fun. Anyway, let's move on to the big question, probably of the year of 2018 by Ben Mitch. Right, and who's going to go first on this answering? Well, just work it out in silence. Okay. Question is, would you rather have Steve Bruce's body and Gabby Abonglahor's head, or Gabby's body and Bruce's head?
Wow.
I remember when this came in, and I did actually give it serious thought.
It had been since I noticed it a few minutes ago. I've not really been focused on anything else.
Now, I'd have to ask him, whose voice do I get?
Well, I think it's whose head
we're
do you get?
We're dust ourselves down, and
I think the clue is in whose head you get.
Okay.
I don't
mind being called potato head. I'd probably have Gabby's body with Steve Bruce's head, because Gabby hasn't got a brain between his ears, has he? So
I definitely have Steve Bruce's body and Gabby's head. I mean, just for the comedy factor, we could sit next to each other in the upper halls. It would be a conversation piece, if nothing else.
That would be brilliant. Yeah, what happened to you two? Well, we were dusting ourselves down and it all went horribly wrong.
Somebody cut our heads off. Yeah, I would probably...
We got cabbaged. One night, we got absolutely cabbaged.
Cabbaged.
I'd probably go with Gabby's body and Bruce's head just because there's probably more chance of living a bit longer.
Can you imagine a Geordie Gabby Agbonlahor?
I have Barry Bannon's legs there as well.
The matchsticks.
Anyway, hopefully, Ben, that answers your question.
That's question of the year so far. Yeah,
it's a very, very, very good question. Mr. Linternet says, are the amount of draws we've picked up over our tenure in the Championship been our downfall? Well, it's been our downfall. Well, it was under, a downfall under McLeish, almost got us relegated. But this season, definitely.
Yes, in a word. Yeah, our lack of being clinical in general has cost us over, well, all three seasons in the Championship, really.
Yeah.
And an incompetent owner. I would throw that in.
Yeah, throw that in.
Yeah.
I think if you want a draw to sum it all up, it's got to be that Forest game where first, what is it, opening minutes, you're expecting to lose that game. You're 2-0 down already, and Forest are no mugs. They're pretty good on the counter, so obviously you're going to have to chase the game, so you're going to be opened up and susceptible to more goals. But to suddenly get yourself into that game and be 5-4 up playing 10 men and then let it slip.
And with a horrible goal, that fifth goal, and the fact that it was grabbing as well, was a joke. But it kind of, it pretty much has summed up the whole league, that you've got all these teams that are can play brilliant, expansive football going forward, and nobody can defend.
Yeah, it was in. I watched that Forest Leeds game, and Leeds, I think Forest were up, and then Leeds went down to 10 men, and you think, oh, that's game over. And then Leeds scored, and Leeds were fighting back and playing as if, you know, they had equal men. And then in the end,
Leeds went 2-1 up in that game, didn't they?
Yeah, and then Forest
and then fell apart.
Just at the end, you know, that extra man kind of showed. Next question. Hoppo1313 asks, what do you think could be done to improve midweek game atmosphere? I don't think it's midweek necessarily. It's every game at Villa Park. And I think they're trying with music before games. There needs to be, it's all right having a flag group on Twitter or whatever, trying to arrange things, but there really needs to be a on-the-ground group like there used to be, the Brigada guys that was shackled by the club. There was a point where that almost became bigger and there was a potential for something interesting in the Holt End. And that was when they were going to make L7 and L8, for want of a better term, a singing section. And they'd actually green lit it. But the thing is, they didn't actually communicate it to anybody. And for example, the only word they put out was in an interview tacked on to a Steve Sherwood, used to play for Watford in goal back in the day. They tacked it on to a Tim Sherwood interview online that basically said, you know, Tim Sherwood's going, oh yeah, we've got to get the fans together. Yeah, got to, you know, we need them in their masses. And then it says, good news, I'm sure Tim will be pleased of. Sections L7, L8 will be a singing section henceforward. That was it. That was the only mention. You can't start such a section in a football ground with that. It takes communication to fans that are already there, like for example season ticket holders, that this thing is coming to town, that this section is going to be there, and what it actually means. A singing section, you know, it's basically a polite way to say standing will be tolerated. And of course there was a drum in there, and you know, XYZ, and fans who weren't expecting this were like, you know, what the hell's going on here, and start complaining straight away, you know, oh, there's a flag in my face for like 5 seconds. Because the modern day football fan is a, let's say, is a bit of a killjoy and quite selfish and entitled and doesn't understand what being in a crowd's all about, and you know, crowd that's going in the same direction.
The post-Taylor Report fan doesn't, that's their base level expectation. It's a very sanitized view of football.
And it's, you know, it's killed the game. I mean, I went to Juventus and, you know, in with the Droogie, and that's another story, because I ended up in a...
Good story, that.
It is a good story. I should tell it one day on the podcast, where I ended up circled by about 15 of them, one of them trying to kill me, but... And I'm still here to tell the tale. So it only takes one Villa fan to take on the Droogie. That's all I'm going to say.
You look at the ultra culture in Italy and Germany, and they run their own stand.
Yeah, and that, this is the difference.
Security
it's
and all.
It's not playing patsy to the club and going, oh, can we wave a flag at the game? It's basically you dictate it because you've got numbers, and that's what Villa... Villa fans are always like fighting with each other, suspicious of each other, or, you know, there's too many kind of factions within the group to actually move in the same direction. And these things, you can't just do it on Twitter. You've got to do it on the ground. And I don't really see much hope of it actually happening.
I think as well, our young and sort of vocal support has been split in recent years, that the Holt End, where it used to be, so many of them now are in the bottom of the North Stand down by the away fans. So your lively support is split two ends of the ground.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know, the reason why they go...
It's cheap, isn't it, down there?
It's cheaper because a lot of fans have been priced out. And also, it is fun. I mean, I've been down there, you know, several times. And it is an actual atmosphere that, you know, takes me back a few years, you know, when there was a bit of an atmosphere at Villa Park. But believe you me, they're clamping down on that section and there's going to be changes incoming. And there's been a lot of crowd surging in celebration of goals, which actually, you know, judging from some of the video footage I've been shown, is dangerous and is a concern. So I think they're going to put little sterile... they're going to do sterile, you know, lines of seats where they just keep them border off that section, I think R2 and R1, so they can kind of police it a bit better because there's a lot of migration. Everybody wants to get down into that corner, you know, for the banter, obviously. But it is a problem. But it's something the club don't really sit down and think, right, how are we going to improve the atmosphere beyond, like, you know, music or waving flags after goals or whatever. That has to come from the fans, and the fans have to be quite forceful with it to make it a thing. And then once you get the numbers and once it's happening, then the club kind of start to appreciate it and help facilitate it. Obviously, you know, you can't take the piss, but it takes a lot of I mean, I've spoken to Liverpool groups who obviously do all the flags and displays on the Kop, and, you know, that just didn't happen overnight. It was about winning stadium security trust and having clear communication and, you know, both of them holding hands as they go along and do it to build that trust. And
it's actually having a bit of a budget to do it well.
Yeah. I mean,
there's no point in half-arsing it. If you're going to do it, you have to do it well.
Yeah, like Ajax, for example, they club would actually give their fans a budget of, you know, a good few grand every season to do TIFOs and displays. One of the kind of semi-reasons they did it was because the Ajax away fans and their European games were causing so much mayhem in different towns and getting banned and getting UEFA fines that they thought, well, we'll do this TIFO display pot. And I forgot how many grand it was. It was a good five-figure, like 75 grand or something ridiculous. Don't quote me on that. But the idea was it was an incentive. It was like, if you behave yourself on away trips, then you get to spend this money on displays. If you don't, then those UEFA fines will come out of that pot, which is the best way to deal with things like that, is to offer like incentives, not just punishments, if you know what I mean, to incentivize good behavior rather than just punishment and bans and all that kind of stuff. In terms of atmosphere, it's one of those things where there's so much barriers in the way that it's hard to see it actually happening and, you know, becoming like the good old days. But I think there is a way of doing it, but it takes so much effort and, you know, life's too short for me. A younger man will do it. Next question. Sturgy Boy asks, Kalinic, legend in the making?
What I'd say about this is you just need to take, in my experience with Villa goalkeepers, legend in the making. Just take L-E-G off legend. It's his end in the making. This would be the one career move. Was it 3 years he's waited? He'll regret those 3 years. He could have done anything else.
What was that quote you told me where he said he's three times better
than
the keeper?
Three times the player that we were going to sign 3 years ago. You think, oh my
word. It could have been 9-0 against Swansea if we signed him 3 years ago.
Think of the improvement. Never mind.
We are joking about this.
I have a feeling he'll come good in time. It'll take a little while to settle in, but I think he'll be all right. Legends win trophies.
Yeah, exactly. Connor Linden 9 says, "How are your podcasts so good?"
Well, where to begin?
It could actually be better if we had the same amount of patrons as the Arseblog has, for example, which is like almost 3,000. So if you're thinking of becoming a My Old Man Said patron, do join myoldmansaid.com and check out the patron option. And you'll notice so good podcasts becoming so great.
That hasn't actually answered the question, though. You haven't actually said, why are we so good?
Just my editing skills, basically. That's about it, really.
Owen, have you got a lot to do tonight?
I think that's more that hits the nail on the head, really. I think it's this condensing of our collective intellectual minds at 2:18 a.m.
Having started at 10 p.m.
on a Sunday night, where we said we'll do a quick one
and we'll have an early night.
Yeah, where you would think I'm going to start 2019 on the front foot, refreshed after 8 hours sleep. None of this late night nonsense like 2018.
This is like self-inflicted Guantanamo style sleep deprivation. That
it's 2:20, and the boiler man's coming around at 8:30 in the morning to start the replacement.
Wonder why you're so grumpy and why is this guy with the body of Gabriel Bonnehoe and the head of Steve Bruce? So this is the weirdest call I've ever had.
He'll just say, judging by your appearance, you're not getting enough beauty sleep. I say, yeah, because that's because I'm up to fucking the early hours recording a podcast and then spending an all-nighter trying to edit it together. Yeah, so that's why the podcasts are so good, because we just basically put ourselves on a path to an early grave just to make them.
And Villa are the gift that keeps on giving.
The material is always there, so that's not a problem. One of the problems why it takes up so much time is because we're not in the same room, and natural conversation is easier flow, because, you know, we don't know when somebody's starting to talk or somebody finishes talking, but you do if you're in the same room, because obviously you can see each other. So that would knock hours off the editing for sure. But we don't really have the
inclination,
equipment, location, or inclination to do the podcast we really want. I mean, one podcast we want to do is the live weekly live show thing. That would be immense, or at least monthly, because then as well as the three of us and other guests that we have on, you'd have
the characters,
you'd have the people in the crowd as well. The whole thing about podcasts is I think it should just be an audio show, and that's why I only wanted to do audio. I mean, people doing YouTube videos as podcasts, they're not podcasts, they're videos.
Yeah.
Well, that's a channel.
I'm talking generally in YouTube. A lot of big YouTubers, like the True Geordie, for example.
Joe Rogan,
that's a video.
And it's an expensive production.
Yeah, and, we're talking multiple camera setups, people behind the scenes, fucking loads of them. I remember this, was it Not the Offside Rule, which is a podcast by three, I think they are all Sky presenters, female Sky presenters, and obviously playing on, what's it called? We Know the Offside Rule, playing that old adage that women, girls don't know the offside rule, which is just sexist in its intent and title, even though it's playing off it. And not only do they have like sponsorship, Pirelli tires and all this kind of stuff, obviously they've got contacts at Sky. Their podcast doesn't do big numbers or anything, but you look at the people who are working on it, and there's hundreds, literally. They've got people writing for their website, and nobody listens to it. We probably get more listeners. And, nothing against it, but this is a bootstrap production, ours is. And, they've got all these people working for free because it'll look good on their CV, blah, blah, blah. Bullshit, basically, people say. Come and work for us and we'll make sure you have an... If you can edit, God, I'd love you. But no, thanks very much for that compliment. I don't know how we carry on doing this, because it doesn't make any sense. But with more patrons, get us up to the Arse Blog standard, then we'll have a proper podcast. And we'll have a record label to release Chris Budd's music on as well. Right, so we're going to die in the morning. We've fucked up our 2019 already. So
bring on 2020, bring on 2020.
So if you want to keep...
And not the cricket.
Well, let's see what you did there.
Thank you.
Right,
thank
you. So that's the end of this bonus show. As we said, we'll try to bring two shows, and obviously, or at least the main show and then a bonus show for the My Old Man Said patrons. So until next time, let's hope the transfer window goes in our favour. So until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
Now that does prompt me for my anecdote from the Hawthorns, when I overheard a West Brom fan as Whelan was being brought onto the field of play as a sub, saying that the only thing the only thing with more pace than Whelan was his receding hairline. And
are you sure that's right? You just said the only thing with more pace than Whelan.
Did I say that? Oh, less pace?
Yeah. Start again. The only thing.
Right.
just from
sorry, my igloo's collapsing around me. It's this modern. It's my recon igloo's collapsing around me. Hang on.
You can start from the only thing.
Yeah, the only thing with more pace than Whelan is his receding hairline.
No. The only thing with less pace.
Less pace than Whelan.
Yeah, you said the only thing with more pace than Whelan. Oh no, sorry. Yeah, no. Yeah, you keep saying more pace.
Yeah, I said more pace, didn't I?
Yeah, but everything's got more pace than Whelan.
Anything with less pace.
Yeah, it should be less pace. Yeah, yeah, okay. Less pace.
The only thing with less pace than... Oh, bloody hell. I'm lost now.
Yeah, it's the only thing with less pace.
Is that right? Is it 1:30 in the morning and I've lost my mind? Is that happening?
What, so he's got a slow receding hairline? If he's got less pace than Glenn Whelan.
No, you're saying the only thing with more pace is what you've just said, but everything's got more pace than Whelan.
Okay, so the only thing with less pace than Whelan is his receding hairline. You cut that in.
Come on, Chris. Fake laughter.
Hardy ha.
You know, when you're doing retakes, you've got to live if it's the freshest moment. Exactly. Right, from the top, do it again, and we'll try to do really good fake laughter. Less take
it has
two.
Reached 1:30 in the morning. You know what? I can't actually think. Right, porridge is coming out of my ears. So it does remind me of the anecdote from the Hawthorns where... What?
No, I just remembered the boiler man's coming at 8:30. Sorry, carry on.
Wounded.
Is he ideal boiler?
That got a laugh.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.